Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jasper. I'm your host, and you're listening to Where the Sidewalk Ends, the unconventional podcast, Predictably Unpredictable.
Please stop what you're doing now. Everyone needs to know this. You are not exempt, nor is anyone you know, and until you have all of this information, you really don't know what you don't know yet, and you need to know how death serious this is before you become any more bamboozled than most of you currently are.
What's up, Doc?
The theories expressed are not the only possible interpretation. Viewers are invited to make a judgment based on all available information.
Everyone watching now, please share this link via the sidebar to any and all of your social media channels. This is important. Simply ask your friends and family to give us 15 minutes. That's all we ask.
Hubba bubba.
I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, "Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you. Gonna take the life to drag me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. I bless the rain.
Wake up, everyone. It's the first of the month, February 1st, 2024. How's everybody doing? Look, I believe there's two kinds of love. The one that people talk about when they describe falling in love, and the kind that God or the universe possesses for us. These two kinds of love are actually so different that there really should be a whole new word to describe the kind of that the universe exudes. But since there is no such word, I'll just call it infinite love, or, you know, unconditional love. Because, like, listen, in the beginning, the spark was necessary for time and space to explode into existence. It was a profoundly huge wish or desire, right? Made or felt by divine intelligence. In the twinkling of an eye. You know, what hadn't existed before suddenly sprang to life, and the heavens and the earth were born. Now, by simple deduction, whatever this divine intelligence was back then, it had to be of good intent, because evil always inevitably self-destructs, and this divine intelligence had to be all-powerful. You know, which is evident simply in this vast, complex, mind-boggling world that exists at all, right? Like, and this divine intelligence had to be the one and only, because everything, everywhere, can always be broken down and tracked back to a single source. And finally, this essence had to be all-loving, because creation and growth are so dependent on it. And, you know, have been for billions of years. So, besides, you know, I asked earlier, without love, why bother creating? When considering the magnitude of the universe and the perfection, balance, and harmony that exists in nature, we're obviously dealing with a creator made wholly of infinite love. There could be no room in such an awareness for imperfection or any other sense of awareness other than love. In the beginning, there was only this awareness, and this awareness could only comprehend infinite love. Thus, its creations and all that come from it could only ever be of infinite love. So, infinite love is everywhere, always. It has no antonym. It is time, space, and matter. It is thought, awareness, and energy. It is the present moment. In every form of consciousness it contains. It is the desire and fulfillment of every dream ever dreamt, the spirit of life in an endless dance of joy becoming. This love, therefore, can't be escaped. even if you wanted to escape it. It's absolute. Right now, no matter who you are, it holds you in the palm of its hand. A hand big enough to hold, keep, and understand the most misguided and vile of all people. This kind of infinite love is not an emotional love. It's not contingent on time, space, or matter, thoughts, beliefs, or perceptions. Yet, if it's not an emotional love, why am I mentioning it here? Because it's your heritage. It's what you're made of. And it's your destination. It's always there to be drawn upon for comfort and support. But all too often, we're oblivious to its ever-present existence, which is invisible until you look for it. My reasonings may seem pretty naive, but sometimes the answers we seek are simple. And for the pockets in the world where you don't see evidence of this infinite love, perhaps it's because we can't see all the things from the extremely limited vantage point offered by our physical senses alone. Still, we can at least grasp that in time and space, there's far more happening than meets the eye. Like the Transformers, there's more than meets the eye. And for the mind-numbing abundance, perfection, and harmony that we do see everywhere, that makes life on our planet possible, we can safely and, you know, conservatively conclude that there is indeed a greater good that bellies all things. The human kind of love is beautiful, but it's almost always emotion-based, which means that it's conditional, based on beliefs and perceptions. So it becomes something that can be given and taken. Unfortunately, it's often knotted with conflicts, expectations, and hopes. It often, you know, transient. It's felt only when circumstances fit into a predefined mold or when certain personal rules are met, contingent upon approval, respect, reciprocation, or friendship. It's rarely, if ever, truly unconditional. You know, love only hurts when you have a belief that has provided you with a limited perspective of yourself and your reality. Human love has become like this because we perceive our illusions to be more real than the reality from which they emerge. So our love is based on the things and circumstances of time and space rather than of spirit, of the spirit that moves them. By looking to spirit first, however, you know, we can see and tap into a love that is forever compassionate, inspiring, forgiving, unyielding, you know, truly unconditional, and most certainly not emotion-based. The upside of human love, besides its obvious beauty, is that it has a lot to teach us. And when it hurts, it means you really have some valuable lessons to learn. Love only hurts when you have a belief that has provided you with a limited perspective of yourself and your reality. And very likely, this has a false perception that has always existed in your life, but was masked by various circumstances, including most recently the relationship you were in before it began hurting. But painful challenges in life don't arise haphazardly. They arrive when you're ready for them. So don't look at this, at the pain as something attributable to misfortune, but rather as an indication that it's time to grow and move on to higher understandings of yourself and your life. Use the pain to pinpoint what your limiting beliefs are. In this way, the gift is your invitation to erase the pain by seeking and finding greater truths about your reality, including that of your eternal magnificence, thereby insulating you from any misunderstandings and future possibilities of feeling pain for the same reasons. Do you feel rejected and unworthy of love? Well, how so? I mean, considering you've been bathed in it since birth as a child of the universe, one with the divine yourself, I mean, do you feel like you have to start over in life when a relationship goes awry? Like, there's nothing wrong with starting over. We all have to do it every day, even when we're in a relationship. People are always changing and evolving, and any given relationship is not the same today as it was just a year or even a month ago. Do you feel like you're facing the world alone? I mean, because you're not. Like, how could you when there are billions of others here and now having the same adventures as you, not to mention an entire universe that you are intimately a part of? Pain is a part for the course when there are misunderstandings. But it gives birth to new insights. Allowing it into your life is just as important as allowing it to move on. And when the pain does show up, even if you don't feel enlightened for your suffering, you will be further along than you realize. You'll be better prepared for even greater happiness in the future. And you'll have closed a gap to understanding the mysteries of your heart. You know, think about that again. Pain is a par for the course when there are misunderstandings, but it gives birth to new insights. Allowing it into your life is just as important as allowing it to move on. Let's talk about hate for a minute. Hate is love in retreat, like, which means that had love not been present in the first place, there could be no hate. Hate among strangers isn't hate. It's either fear or anger. Hate among former friends, however, is a reflection of an emotional love that had conditions. And had likely the conditions not met was the lover's return. Or the love's return. So remember that we're talking about perception here. And perceiving that love is not returned doesn't necessarily mean that it's not. For hate to exist, there must be some rule or condition you held on or believed that was not met. By understanding the pain you feel from your hate, you can follow it to the cause of your misperceptions. Did you feel like your happiness depends on someone else? Well, if so, remember that happiness is a product of perception, and you alone control your perceptions. Did you feel violated? Well, violations are like challenges. You experience them only when your thinking or misunderstandings have drawn you to a place where higher learning can take place. Those thoughts, coupled with all your other thoughts, have crafted the perfect circumstances for your training. And just because you can't see the merit in the possible cruel circumstances you face doesn't mean that your own inner objectives haven't been met or that you didn't seek out the lesson. I mean, it's not easy to see the perfection when we feel violated, but by understanding that there are no accidents and no coincidences, or as I asked a religious friend so he could understand it in his terms, do you think God makes mistakes? I mean, we begin to grasp like that everything always happens for reasons. Reasons that we are intimately tied to, and accepting this helps heal the pain. Hate is love in retreat. So let's think about fear for a second. Well, fear is a scary emotion, but don't just feel it, use it. Every unpleasant emotion of yours screams out that you have limiting beliefs or a false understanding. And fear is no different. Like, let me relate to a personal fear-based experience that I used to have. In my life, you know, I've flown hundreds of thousands of miles over every rickety airline and type of aircraft imaginable. Yet, about 15 years ago, when flying across the United States, I looked down at the earth, you know, from my window seat about 7 miles high and suddenly felt a terror I've never known before. Like, and I do mean it, terror. It was as if every cell in my body was vibrating fear, a horrible fear, a fear that you'd do almost anything to avoid. This fear seemingly came from nowhere, and it tore through me. I never, ever been remotely scared of heights before, so I was shocked to be having these feelings. Well, the terror sporadically appeared on almost all of my flights over the next 7 or 8 years, and because it seemed so irrational to me. You know, I couldn't pin down the limiting belief or the misunderstandings that gave it occasion to arise. But instead, every time it happened, and in between flights, I just blasted myself with countless reasons, beliefs, why I shouldn't be afraid, including flight safety statistics. You know, the fact that, you know, as a spiritual being, I'm indestructible, and that so-called accidents, like coincidences, never happen, that death is only an illusion, things like that. And finally, you know, having willfully and regularly immersed myself into seeing things from a new perspective and forcing myself to continue to flying when I had the opinion that terror gradually subsided, like every time, like it's like the fear existed in one room of many in the mansion of my mind. And I learned where that room was and developed the ability to avoid it. And while I still didn't know how that room got there, I do know that I'm better off for having moved through it, and that because of it, I am able to ingrain into my being greater truths about myself and the world I live in, that were quite obviously lacking from my repertoire. Wake up, wake up, everyone. It's the first of the month, February 1st, 2024. How's everybody doing? Look, I believe there's two kinds of love. The one that people talk about when they describe falling in love, and the kind that God or the universe possesses for us. These two kinds of love are actually so different that there really should be a whole new word to describe the kind of that the universe exudes. But since there is no such word, I'll just call it infinite love, or, you know, unconditional love. Because, like, listen, in the beginning, the spark was necessary for time and space to explode into existence. It was a profoundly huge wish or desire, right? Made or felt by divine intelligence. In the twinkling of an eye, you know, what hadn't existed before suddenly sprang to life, and the heavens and the earth were born. Now, by simple deduction, whatever this divine intelligence was back then, it had to be of good intent, because evil always inevitably self-destructs, and this divine intelligence had to be all-powerful, you know, which is evident simply in this vast, complex, mind-boggling world that exists at all, right? Like, and this divine intelligence had to be the one and only, because everything, everywhere, can always be broken down and tracked back to a single source. And finally, this essence had to be all-loving, because creation and growth are so dependent on it. And, you know, have been for billions of years. So, besides, you know, I asked earlier, without love, why bother creating? When considering the magnitude of the universe and the perfection, balance, and harmony that exists in nature, we're obviously dealing with a creator made wholly of infinite love. There could be no room in such an awareness for imperfection or any other sense of awareness other than love. In the beginning, there was only this awareness, and this awareness could only comprehend infinite love. Thus, its creations and all that come from it could only ever be of infinite love. So, infinite love is everywhere, always, It has no antonym. It is time, space, and matter. It is thought, awareness, and energy. It is the present moment in every form of consciousness it contains. It is the desire and fulfillment of every dream ever dreamt, the spirit of life in an endless dance of joy becoming. This love, therefore, can't be escaped. Even if you wanted to escape it, it's absolute. Right now, no matter who you are, it holds you in the palm of its hand. A hand big enough to hold, keep, and understand the most misguided and vile of all people. This kind of infinite love is not an emotional love. It's not contingent on time, space, or matter, thoughts, beliefs, or perceptions. Yet, if it's not an emotional love, why am I mentioning it here? Because it's your heritage. It's what you're made of, and it's your destination. It's always there to be drawn upon for comfort and support. But all too often, we're oblivious to its ever-present existence, which is invisible until you look for it. My reasonings may seem pretty naive, but sometimes the answers we seek are simple. And for the pockets in the world where you don't see evidence of this infinite love, perhaps it's because we can't see all the things from the extremely limited vantage point offered by our physical senses alone. Still, we can at least grasp that in time and space, there's far more happening than meets the eye. Like the Transformers, there's more than meets the eye. And for the mind-numbing abundance, perfection, and harmony that we do see everywhere that makes life on our planet possible, we can safely and, you know, conservatively conclude that there is indeed a greater good that bellies all things. The human kind of love is beautiful, but it's almost always emotion-based, which means that it's conditional, based on beliefs and perceptions. So it becomes something that can be given and taken. Unfortunately, it's often knotted with conflicts, expectations, and hopes. It often, you know, transient. It's felt only when circumstances fit into a predefined mold or when certain personal rules are met, contingent upon approval, respect, reciprocation, or friendship. It's rarely, if ever, truly unconditional. You know, love only hurts when you have a belief that has provided you with a limited perspective of yourself and your reality. Human love has become like this because we perceive our illusions to be more real than the reality from which they emerge. So our love is based on the things and circumstances of time and space rather than of spirit, of the spirit that moves them. By looking to spirit first, however, you know, we can see and tap into a love that is forever compassionate, inspiring, forgiving, unyielding, you know, truly unconditional, and most certainly not emotion-based. The upside of human love, besides its obvious beauty, is that it has a lot to teach us. And when it hurts, it means you really have some valuable lessons to learn. Love only hurts when you have a belief that has provided you with a limited perspective of yourself and your reality. And very likely, this has a false perception that has always existed in your life, but was masked by various circumstances, including most recently the relationship you were in before it began hurting. But painful challenges in life don't arise haphazardly. They arrive when you're ready for them. So don't look at this, at the pain, as something attributable to misfortune, but rather as an indication that it's time to grow and move on to higher understandings of yourself and your life. Use the pain to pinpoint what your limiting beliefs are. In this way, the gift is your invitation to erase the pain by seeking and finding greater truths about your reality, including that of your eternal magnificence, thereby insulating you from any misunderstandings and future possibilities of feeling pain for the same reasons. Do you feel rejected and unworthy of love? Well, how so? I mean, considering you've been bathed in it since birth as a child of the universe, one with the divine yourself, I mean, do you feel like you have to start over in life when a relationship goes awry? Like, there's nothing wrong with starting over. We all have to do it every day, even when we're in a relationship. People are always changing and evolving, and any given relationship is not the same today as it was just a year or even a month ago. Do you feel like you're facing the world alone? I mean, because you're not. Like, how could you when there are billions of others here and now having the same adventures as you, not to mention an entire universe that you are intimately a part of? Pain is a part for the course when there are misunderstandings. But it gives birth to new insights. Allowing it into your life is just as important as allowing it to move on. And when the pain does show up, even if you don't feel enlightened for your suffering, you will be further along than you realize. You'll be better prepared for even greater happiness in the future. And you'll have closed a gap to understanding the mysteries of your heart. You know, think about that again. Pain is a par for the course when there are misunderstandings, but it gives birth to new insights. Allowing it into your life is just as important as allowing it to move on. Let's talk about hate for a minute. Hate is love in retreat, like, which means that had love not been present in the first place, there could be no hate. Hate among strangers isn't hate. It's either fear or anger. Hate among former friends, however, is a reflection of an emotional love that had conditions. And had likely the conditions not met was the lover's return. Or the love's return. So remember that we're talking about perception here. And perceiving that love is not returned doesn't necessarily mean that it's not. For hate to exist, there must be some rule or condition you held on or believed that was not met. By understanding the pain you feel from your hate, you can follow it to the cause of your misperceptions. Did you feel like your happiness depends on someone else? Well, if so, remember that happiness is a product of perception, and you alone control your perceptions. Did you feel violated? Well, violations are like challenges. You experience them only when your thinking or misunderstandings have drawn you to a place where higher learning can take place. Those thoughts, coupled with all your other thoughts, have crafted the perfect circumstances for your training. And just because you can't see the merit in the possible cruel circumstances you face doesn't mean that your own inner objectives haven't been met or that you didn't seek out the lesson. I mean, it's not easy to see the perfection when we feel violated, but by understanding that there are no accidents and no coincidences, or as I asked a religious friend so he could understand it in his terms, do you think God makes mistakes? I mean, we begin to grasp like that everything always happens for reasons. Reasons that we are intimately tied to, and accepting this helps heal the pain. Hate is love in retreat. So let's think about fear for a second. Well, fear is a scary emotion, but don't just feel it, use it. Every unpleasant emotion of yours screams out that you have limiting beliefs or a false understanding. And fear is no different. Like, let me relate to a personal fear-based experience that I used to have. In my life, you know, I've flown hundreds of thousands of miles over every rickety airline and type of aircraft imaginable. Yet, about 15 years ago, when flying across the United States, I looked down at the earth, you know, from my window seat about 7 miles high, and suddenly felt a terror I've never known before. Like, and I do mean it, terror. It was as if every cell in my body was vibrating fear, a horrible fear, a fear that you'd do almost anything to avoid. This fear seemingly came from nowhere, and it tore through me. I never, ever been remotely scared of heights before, so I was shocked to be having these feelings. Well, the terror sporadically appeared on almost all of my flights over the next 7 or 8 years, and because it seemed so irrational to me. You know, I couldn't pin down the limiting belief or the misunderstandings that gave it occasion to arise. But instead, every time it happened, and in between flights, I just blasted myself with countless reasons, beliefs, why I shouldn't be afraid, including flight safety statistics, you know, the fact that, you know, as a spiritual being, I'm indestructible, and that so-called accidents, like coincidences, never happen, that death is only an illusion, things like that. And finally, you know, having willfully and regularly immersed myself into seeing things from a new perspective and forcing myself to continue to flying when I had the opinion that terror gradually subsided, like every time. Like, it's like the fear existed in one room of many in the mansion of my mind. And I learned where that room was and developed the ability to avoid it. And while I still didn't know how that room got there, I do know that I'm better off for having moved through it, and that because of it, I am able to ingrain into my being greater truths about myself and the world I live in, that were quite obviously lacking from my repertoire. Of course, not all fears are so obvious. The fear of failure, disappointment, being hurt, or not being approved of, for example, you know, are all virtually invisible fears until you're tested. Then wham, you know something's going on. But again, once you're tested, it means it's time to grow, which can only happen by facing and dealing with your fears and, when possible, following them to the limiting beliefs that have created the false perceptions. You know, as I did with my fear of flying, I used my bulldoze and liquefy approach to deal with my limiting beliefs, supplanting the invisible beliefs that gave rise to the fears by understanding and acting on other truths about my own conditions and my reality. Incidentally, I never did figure out what my limiting beliefs were that created my fear of flying, which illustrates that uncovering this culprit isn't even necessary when it comes to moving forward and beyond it.
Cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, as sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become. Gonna take a life to drag me away from you.
Oh, thank you.